everybody, and welcome to the Frontside Podcast, episode 42. I am Charles Lowell, and with me is Brandon Hayes, as well as some other really, 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 really special guests, which I am really excited to have on the show today.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Yes, really.
Really, really. I was thinking of really, truly, but no, I wanted to go back to really. So, I don't know, Brandon, you're pretty stoked about the show today?
I am. I'm really excited today. I actually wanted to do this for a long time, and we finally were able to line it up once we figured out that we can record a podcast more than once every 6 weeks. So, we're really,
really,
really excited to have Taras Minkowski and Lennox Zinyando with us. We'll have you each introduce yourselves. But basically, the point of this podcast is we want to talk to you. You're doing some really cool stuff with apprenticeship, Taras. And Lennox is one of your earlier apprentices, and it's been, from everything I've seen, tremendously successful. Lennox, you're an awesome developer. And so we wanted to talk to you, find out how you're doing that stuff. But we'd love to have each of you introduce yourselves and talk a little bit about your background. So we'll start with you, Taras.
I'm really excited to be here. I also feel like I need to point out the fact that this is podcast number 42.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's the meaning of life and everything.
We would be very quite remiss to miss that. Thank you so much. We were so really excited that we forgot about this was the purpose of everything.
That's right. We're sitting on the main nerve right now. This is it, people. This is it. It's everything.
I'm really hoping that if you ask me questions, I'm going to answer them faster than the
yes.
famous answer. So I'm really glad to be here. I mean, I want to give a little bit of my story because I feel like a lot of things that I've been doing over the last 10 years have been adding up to what I'm doing now. And so I have a pretty diverse background. Programming wasn't something I wanted to do because when I was 12, my dad gave me a Java book and he said, learn how to program. And I'm like, this is terrible. So that was a really rough introduction for me, even though I think I was technically inclined, and I did like IT for a long time. I did a lot of different things, but then a certain point, since I was a little kid, I always wanted to be a businessman before I think I even knew what that was. So my focus has always been on the business of things, and technology happened to be one of the only ways that I knew how to access that in a way that was actionable based on something that I could do. I've tried a lot of different things. One of the things that I did before was a company called Positive Sum, where we spent about 4 years or 4.5 years trying to figure out how do you build relationships where everybody who works with you wins. And so when that Positive Sum company ended up being a zero sum for me, I ended up leaving and starting from scratch. So EmberSherpa also, like I have another company called WRKTG Inc., which is the mothership for EmberSherpa, and that acronym refers to working together. So everything that I've kind of been doing has come from the perspective of like, how do I bring people to work together and how do I make it possible for people to have like win-win-win scenarios? And I think that's kind of what brings us to where we are today with this conversation about apprenticeship.
Cool. Thanks for that. And then Lennox, how did you get into software and what was your background? I don't know if you come from a computer science background or you were doing something else.
I'm Lennox Zinyando. I'm based in Harare, Zimbabwe. I've always wanted to work with computers since an early age, but then access to computers was really hard to come by. So, you know, I used to spend a lot of money going to internet cafes so that I could access the internet. After a few years of graduating high school, I went to work for a bank for a few years, and I decided to leave because I really, really wanted to become a programmer developing software. I joined a local company that does mobile marketing as a technical support person. So I worked with them for a few years, and I met Taras on Twitter somewhere last year, beginning of last year. And then I pestered him so that he could mentor me. So now I'm an apprentice at EmberSherpa.
Okay, so you said you met him on Twitter and you said, "Hey, I'd like to be your apprentice." But how did that interaction actually occur? Was there like a tweet that went out and said, "Hey, I'm looking for apprentices," or was it you just kind of saw that he was knowledgeable and you said, "Hey, can you help me?" Like how did that interaction first happen?
Actually, I saw a conversation between him and another guy. Where the guy was actually, they were discussing how they could, I think they wanted to pay on it or something. And then I just asked if I could join the process, be part of the team that was going to pay on it. And then Taras created a Slack for us, and that's how we started.
So you just said, hey, can I join that pairing session? And the rest is history at this point?
Yeah, something like
now
that.
Now you're a world famous software developer, so it seems to have worked. Well, that's really cool. I'd like to ask you, Taras, was that sort of intentional on your part? You said your arc was bending toward, you know, community and greater than zero sum type work. As you were bending that arc toward that, did you have the idea of, I mean, your name was Ember Sherpa on Twitter, so clearly you had some sort of training or guidance aspect to what you were doing. Was apprenticeship part of that model by then, or is that something you kind of stumbled on?
I always imagined what things might look like. And so I imagined that there might be a scenario. I tried to do this with WordPress before, which is create a scenario where I'm helping people learn, and in a process, they like cultivate a community of people that follow what I do through helping them become, you know, like an engineer. It didn't work very well with WordPress, but it seems to have worked with Ember. But it's very much an iterative process. I kind of went through a bunch of hardships trying to figure out a structure that is actually sustainable. That's the really hard part, I think, about creating like win-win scenarios, is that they need to be sustainable, and finding a way to make it sustainable, that was really tricky.
That's, yes, that's something that we're discovering as well, right? You identify these values and you say, hey, these are the things I value. And then you discover how expensive they are in the process of trying to implement them, and trying to do that in a way that you can keep going, that doesn't basically require everything from you all the time. That's really hard. So it was something that clearly, like, you cared about. You were trying to do it in WordPress. You said you ran into a lot of like painful lessons there. I'd actually be curious to dig into a couple of those things that you wound up finding were not sustainable.
It's ironic, actually. I found mentoring to not be very sustainable. From a business perspective, like, I think mentoring is a really great service, but because it relies so much on people like myself who have to be like people that get to a certain level through their hard work, you end up wanting to get paid well for the work that you do. And then in that scenario, it becomes very difficult to, like, offering mentoring services is very valuable, but it's also a very premium service. And so being able to sustain myself and being able to offer service that businesses want to pay for, and in a way that is going to benefit the company, is going to benefit the, you know, apprentice and benefit me, that was really difficult. But it seems to have, like, shifting towards apprenticeship turns out to be the answer for me, at least, to being able to. It was like one of those things that was like right under my nose, but it took a really long time for me to see that actually apprenticeship is the answer to creating this scenario. And it's really funny how something might be right in front of you, but you might not see it for a year and a half.
What's different about apprenticeship from mentorship, basically?
So mentorship for me is supporting a company that has a team of developers, and basically the company is paying me to mentor their developers. And so it seems like a very fine distinction, but the difference with apprenticeship is that the focus is on the individual, and all the other things are kind of secondary. When I stop thinking about myself as a mentor, or stop talking about mentoring and start talking about apprenticeship, it becomes about creating structures for others to be successful. And I think by like making that shift on creating opportunities for others to grow, it's one of those things where like you shift your focus towards something else, and it makes your path forward easier. And that's kind of what I found with apprenticeship. Even though I was doing it for a while, like I started working with Linux a year and a half before I made the shift, but focusing on the apprentice and making the apprentice successful actually helped me make my business more sustainable.
So basically by defining the problem scope as, hey, this is about an apprentice and not about how good a mentor I am, you basically discovered, I think all businesses go through this at some point too, like anybody with a purpose ends up discovering that the thing that doesn't scale is your time. And the only way out of that is to develop a process that's focused on achieving an outcome. And so apprenticeship is the definition of the process by which somebody gets better, and focusing on them rather than non-scalable Taras's time.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yep. So Linux, so then you came on as an apprentice about a year ago. Can you describe the process from your perspective of like what that apprenticeship has entailed, and maybe even how that's evolved over time?
Initially, we worked on like small apps when I was trying to get the basics of Ember. And to be honest, I didn't know a lot of JavaScript. So that process was kind of painful for me. And it took a bit of time for Taras to in myself to admit that, and then I decided to maybe focus a bit on knowing my JavaScript properly. But then after that, things started going on smoothly. Would pay a lot if I would get tasks to do. Would work on open source projects. I've worked on Hospital Run. I've worked on Ghosts and Documize. Actually contributing, you know, PRs, learning the whole thing the whole process, you know.
So you basically, you have commits on open source projects now out there in the world.
Yes, I do.
And you had that, like, how long had you been developing software before you were basically doing that?
Not long. It was just a few HTML sites with a bit of PHP. And then Ember is like the first, programming thing that I've done.
I think that's really interesting that you kind of, like part of the process you seem to be describing is you kind of got thrown into the deep end of the pool.
Yes.
Like, hey, let's, you know, this is a new language for you. We're going to be doing open source projects that people actually use. And you were actually contributing working code into a real life, you know, thousands of people are using the code that you actually wrote in very early stages of your development career, which I think is a really interesting model. Taras, would you say that is like, is that part of the model or is that just sort of a coincidence of how this went down? Like, is that part of the design of the apprenticeship model?
Oh, it's certainly by design. I think there's something really beautiful about Ember, and it's the fact that it creates a possibility of an ecosystem of open source applications that solve specific problems. And that is enabled by the fact that we have this collection of conventions. And so when I chose Ember as a technology to focus on, I kind of made a guess that this might happen. And then when I realized that Linux needed to learn by doing real practical things, I went out looking for those applications. And, you know, it started off as being, first it was hospital run, and it was kind of really uncertain whether hospital run would even take us seriously, right? Because we're saying, I'm going to help this person work on your application for free. Will you talk to us and tell us what we need to be able to make this happen and make it so that you can actually merge this code? But, you know, it's proven that this seems to be something that maintainers of open source applications are willing to do. And now we have something like, I don't know what it is, but 20 applications on our, I have a list of open source Ember applications that we're adding to on a regular basis. And they're all opportunities for our future apprentices to contribute and improve their skills and actually have something that they can show and say, look, I did this.
So I'll grab that and put that in show notes. That seems like something that, you know, just producing that list was important to your apprenticeship, but actually everything that you do when you do work out in the public like this adds value elsewhere as well. Like, that's a really cool and useful list for people to have of things that people can actually contribute to.
Yeah, and I hope that there are other applications that we don't know about that are going to get added to this list, because if we can have more apprentices helping more open source applications, I think that's something that's really great for Ember, and it's also great for, it's a win-win. You know, it's a win-win for everybody.
So I'm curious how, so you've got this big list. I mean, 20, 25 open source applications, that's a big list. And I assume there's a lot of people. Like, how do you, you talked about how making the shift towards apprenticeship allowed you to scale, but I'm curious more, like, I actually am curious about that process because, like, how does it scale? There still is only one, you know, there is only one of you. And so how do you manage, you know, more than one apprentice, two, three, like, how many is reasonable? And how do you bump that number up and get more people coming along?
Right. So I think what's happening now is that like my apprentices are actually, you know, have their own apprentices, right? And I think that's the key to scaling this, because at a certain point, what happens, like, you know, I mentioned earlier is that at one point I paired with 100 people and I realized that people have very common problems. And depending on what stage they're in their learning, they all tend to have very similar problems. And the way to scale supporting a lot of people, I think, is to have the apprentice that just learned or apprentice that has like 6 months of Ember experience, they can support somebody who just started, you know, last week or started 2 months ago. And they're actually a really good person to support that person. Like, I'm actually, you know, if I support somebody who just started Ember, you know, it creates a situation where, like, I want to be able to help, but I've answered this question so many times already that it becomes repetitive. It's actually, it takes away from the energy of me trying to explain this to the person. So having an apprentice support a new person is great for the apprentice because they get to grow, and it's great for the person because they get really personal attention.
So I want to make a note, and it's a little, I feel like I should have noted this earlier. Part of the reason that we wanted to talk to you two about this is we've taken several swings at apprenticeship at Frontside, and we're in a sort of unique position in that we don't see a lot of companies doing this very actively. I saw a company called Optiva that had an apprenticeship model that I admired a lot, and then they got acquired by Groupon, and everything that was good about that company died. And I haven't seen this done a ton, and our attempts have been kind of shots in the dark on this, and it's been very challenging. And your approach to this seems to be working in a way that I have not seen happen elsewhere. And so what I'm hoping, part of, you know, drawing out this conversation is the process of discovering what is working for you and what other people can adopt, like basically define how this is actually like seems like a pretty successful case and how people might adopt that in their businesses and in their workplaces and in even in their capacity. And I love the concept of moving away from mentorship as a concept and toward apprenticeship, where this becomes more of a defined process. And I know that you're, you know, I'm sure you've, to you, it feels like you're kind of fumbling around as well, but you seem to be landing on a lot of things that really seem to be working. Are you noticing any patterns in terms of, okay, so somebody, you get them working on real world applications, they tend to support each other. What other tools, I guess, or patterns are you using to help that process kind of stick with people and scale? Because it seems to last longer than just a couple months too, which is important.
I think one thing that I talk to our clients who, because we do sell apprenticeship, like so our part of the process of the apprentice evolving from someone who has never maybe done programming before or who is very new to Amber to actually being a good productive member of the team is actually starting off doing something that is very low stress. So doing something like, you know, open source contributions. Then being in a situation where they're able to make a difference, but there isn't a lot of pressure on them. So like one of the ways that I set that up is I tell our clients that this person is an apprentice. And the reason why you would want to hire this person is because first of all, if they have a problem, they can ask me, but also this person, like a lot of the things that we do in Ember are very repetitive. They're patterns that once you've taught, you can use that pattern over and over again. And I think at a certain point, like, you know, if you implemented a few tables, implementing fourth or fifth table isn't that different than the first three. And you don't get that much more effective at it because you're still limited by quickly you can type. So if an apprentice knows how to implement a table, then apprentice is just as qualified to implement that table in Ember as I am, for example, especially if they have access to the immediate feedback that they need when they get stuck. And so I think setting, like what I've been doing is first of all, being very, very honest with people that I work with saying like, this is what's going to happen. There's going to be a person working on your project and this person is going to be doing this work. And also kind of talking about the reality of Ember work, which is there is a lot of things that are really difficult that very smart and experienced Ember developers can solve. But there's a lot of work that we do in large Ember applications that there's lots of paved paths for that. There's lots of just like assembly, kind of the groundwork. And I think that's a really great opportunity for people who are learning Ember to get the repetition, the kind of muscle memory of understanding how to solve problems. I think it's the repetition of doing like data down actions up, the repetition of doing like working with computer properties, repetition of writing tests. Like all these things are things that apprentices need to do to become very good at writing Ember applications.
And that's actually my experience as well. Like I come from a non-traditional background and I knew that I got a sense for when I was trying to learn a new thing that it was a certain number of projects before I felt like somebody could give me something and I felt comfortable saying, hey, I can probably do that. It wasn't my first project and it wasn't like 100. So have you kind of discovered a number in there of projects that somebody might have worked on when you talk about that repetition? Is there a number of times of repetition that you find people become comfortable with something?
On a number of projects for me to feel too comfortable.
Yeah. At what point do you start feeling comfortable and a little more confident that somebody could hand you something that you haven't seen before and say, hey, I could probably tackle that? Is there a certain number of projects that you've handled before you felt like you could just jump in on that?
I can say for testing, for example, writing acceptance test, I wrote the initial test suite for hospital. And the next project that I did, I was really comfortable with acceptance testing. That was just one of those things that I could do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think just doing it once or twice is enough for you to feel comfortable doing something. I don't know about that stuff, but then for what I've done so far, that has been okay.
So that's interesting. So what I'm hearing is you weren't doing like the whole slice of the application. You were focusing on, okay, the acceptance test. That is the thing that I'm going to take on. That's the thing that I'm going to own. I'm actually just not going to worry about everything that lies underneath it or how to implement the acceptance test, but I'm going to learn acceptance testing in an Ember application. And then once I've got that skill, now it's in my pocket and I can take it to the next problem.
At what point do you start feeling these things, Linux, at what point do you start feeling these things start to click together where you have the tests over here and you have maybe understanding the router over there and you have maybe understanding components over here? Like each of these things takes its time and it's difficult and it's a new concept. At what point do you start feeling like that you have like a full picture of how an application works and that you could kind of attack it from different angles?
In my experience, for hospital run, I did the test and I did a lot of refactoring from Ember 1.x to 2.x. So I got to touch a little bit of everything. And the next project in Ghost, I implemented a feature. That feature, it required me to use all the previous knowledge that I gained from hospital run to build something that actually worked and did stuff properly. In my next project, I'm now building an app from the ground up using previous knowledge from all the other projects. So you're always building on top of what you got before.
So Taras, this is, actually sounds like an interesting pattern. And I don't know if, again, I don't know if this is sort of something you've discovered or it happens over time, or even if I'm reading it right. But it sounds like you're really mixing up these tasks where some of them are kind of a deep dive on one small piece, like, hey, I want you to write acceptance tests around this, and you'll get familiar with acceptance testing. And then you have a thin slice of something like an upgrade, an Ember upgrade that touches all aspects of the code base, but in a thinner area, as well as a ground up building of something. Sounds like maybe later. Is that sort of mix of types of work intentional, or is that just sort of something that, hey, if the work is there and it seems like something somebody can do, let them grab it?
I think some of the things are very intentional. Like the last project that Linux is working on, I intentionally said, like, I think you now have enough experience doing all of the, like, you've been dealing with other people's problems for a while now. You know, you like,
yeah.
So I think it's, you know, it's time for you to like make your own problems so you can actually understand that process a little bit better. But other things that are actually just very practical things, like the reason why starting with testing, why we started with testing is because without tests in place, I don't have guarantees that the things that Linux is doing are not breaking functionality. And then what that means is that if I don't have that guarantee, that means that the chances of me being pulled into something randomly is very high. And then that's the kind of risk that I can't take. So actually what happens now is almost every conversation with new clients starts off with, before, I know you guys want to do features, but before we can do that, we need to build your acceptance test suite. And so this is actually a very practical thing. I think it's part of apprenticeship program for us is actually teaching the things. It's a very practical thing, right? It's like, we need to have tests to be able to do this work.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. There is some debate in the community around like, well, how soon do you introduce that to somebody? Is it something that is an advanced concept? I was not introduced to testing until much later in my development career, because somebody, basically my first introduction to testing was somebody handed me the Kent Beck book called Test Driven Development, which is all written in Java, before I had learned to program. And I was like, I don't get it. And so that was my last attempt at testing for about 2.5 years. And so it wasn't part of my process, but when I did discover it, it seemed like it did make everything easier. So the fact that you're able to do that up front, I imagine probably saves a lot of time and frustration for people. So they have something to like back up to during the course of their learning process. There's always like a place where they knew this thing was working.
I think there's another pattern that is underneath this, which is it's very important to give people what they need to be able to move forward. And so with Linux, when he started working on Hospital One, I spent almost half a week, maybe almost a week, setting up, because they never had tests, right? So we had to make it possible for him to write tests. So we need to actually write the first acceptance test. And what that means is that you need to go in and find all the problems with the app that prevent you from writing an acceptance test and actually fix those problems, right? So if I just, you know, if I said to Linux, you know, write the acceptance test for this without giving him any paved path to do that, I think the chance of him succeeding would be very low.
So yeah, you basically have to pre-shave all the yaks around getting the first one going. And from that point forward, they're likely to be able to carry the ball further.
Right.
I have a question for you, Linux, in that sort of vein is, how do you know when you're stuck on something that is like well outside of your capability versus when you're supposed to stick with something because you know there's something you're supposed to learn? Like, is that a skill that you've had to develop, or is that something that, I don't know, like I'm not sure how to deal with that with our apprenticeship. And I'm wondering how you've dealt with that.
One thing that Taras has taught me is if I'm facing a challenge, I should work on it. Taras usually says, work on it for a day. If you fail, then come to me. So it helps me to not give up easily. If it's beyond me, then after that day, Taras is going to help me. But then usually I end up getting through that and finding a solution.
Interesting. I had worried that a day was too long of a feedback loop to let somebody bang their head. But it sounds like that you've landed on a day as being kind of the approximate amount of time somebody could spend and try to solve something themselves. Is that basically a fair, like a good, wind up being a good place to land?
Well, for me and Taras, because of the time zone difference, a day usually means when he wakes up.
Oh, okay.
So there isn't that much of a gap.
Yeah, but it makes sense, right? When I think about it, I wasn't thinking about it in terms of that being an appropriate like size feedback loop. But when you think about what you're actually doing when you're programming, a day is actually a very reasonable amount of time to struggle with a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so before you say, oh man, I just need to find someone to pair with this on, or I'm going to, I've done my Googling and whatever, but I need to like try and like roll back and look at for like some prior art on this, or try and connect with somebody who's sharing a similar problem. Like, I think that makes a lot of sense, right? That's something that we all encounter in our daily lives.
Yeah.
And how long, and we know, like, from people who experience, how long sometimes it takes for us to understand something.
Yeah.
You know?
Sometimes years.
Yeah. And I think that it's really tricky. It's hard because learning takes time, right? And so you have to actually, and that's one of the things that I'm not sure exactly how this is going to work, but I know if clients are paying me to mentor their team, I'm going to be available to them within half an hour to an hour to answer that question, because the client can't afford to wait a day for them to get that answer. But for a person who is learning as their primary deliverable, I think, you know, a day, you know, I think is reasonable amount of time for a person to try to like even sleep on it.
Right.
You know?
It's true. I mean, it's a tough line. I think, Brandon, one time you said something that always stuck with me. You said that learning only happens when you bang your head against the wall so that your brain is soft enough to accept the answer. And you don't achieve learning without the banging your head against the wall first.
Yep. Brandon is the king of violent metaphors. There's actually an important aspect to this that I don't want to drop onto the floor, and that is the idea that part of this process is that that you have people that have access to one another. That's part of how you're scaling it. That you're also kind of helping, it seems like you're helping build a small community of apprentices to help each other. So Linux, my question is this, like, how often do you wind up using that network of people versus you feel like you just handle it on your own? Like, how much do you wind up accessing that?
I access it a lot. I usually get stuck. And then I know someone works on a project which is similar to what I'm doing right now. So I can just easily ping him, and then a few minutes or a few hours later, we are pairing on it.
That seems like a way where you're able to do that without reaching out too much to Taras. And it feels like you're, you know, asking for help and figuring it out, but it means that you don't have to roll up to the most experienced person for every single question, that you kind of are starting to build a network of people that stitching together your own mentorship in effect, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. It's easier to understand a concept when someone who's maybe on your level or slightly above you, when they're explaining it to you. Maybe for me, it's easier to understand.
That jives with a lot of our experience. And I guess I can't remember what book this is from. I'm pretty sure it's stolen from another book, but I read it from the book Pragmatic Programmer, where they talk about the zone of proximal development, where it's easier to learn from people who have just a bit more experience than you, because they haven't completely forgotten how they learned the thing that you're trying to learn. And after a while, expertise means that you actually internalize that to the point where you can no longer remember not knowing it. And so that can be really tough when you're, I think that's actually something that a lot of mentors should probably know and recognize and understand. People that want to take apprenticeship on need to understand that you probably have lost a lot of the empathy. I know I have, and it really bums me out because it doesn't feel like that long ago that I was a brand new developer, but I'll sit with somebody who's brand new and I forgot how I learned the thing that I'm sitting there trying to teach somebody. And you start getting that little burning sensation in the back of your head, like, how can you not know this? And you know that at one point you did not know this, but you don't remember not knowing it. It's a very strange sensation to have gone through all of that and then lose that empathy. And so I feel like that must be a really important concept. So another question I would have for you, Linux, is how much of your time do you wind up spending helping other people do that kind of stuff as well? Do you wind up participating in some mentorship stuff at this point?
Yeah, yes, I do. I actually have people now, there are about three people that have reached out to me on Twitter wanting my help, and I've paired with them on their own projects. They ask me questions. I've got guys that I help with Ember stuff in our local community, and maybe because of the apprenticeship that I'm doing with others, they think I'm an expert in Ember. Yeah, but I'm actually helping other people a lot. Yeah,
I think that's really phenomenal. That sounds like success to me.
Yeah, I'm actually curious of, you know, so having been through this process and, you know, experienced success at it, were there any times where, you know, you kind of felt like you wanted to throw up your hands and be like, this is not working? Or what were those moments of frustration or mistakes that, not mistakes, but were there any moments of frustration? What action did you take to course correct on that? If not, that's fine too.
Yeah, if not, I'll just know you're lying.
No, there were definitely challenges. I mean, Lennox and I both went through some difficult learning in terms of, and you know, questioned whether we'd be able to do this. I mean, I don't want to speak for Lennox, but I know from like there are certain things that you have to learn to be able to work with people, and those things are not even they're not programming things. And I think that the biggest obstacles that Lennox and I had have been related to like communication and being reliable for each other. I think that's the part that's been hardest. But the reality, I think, is that this is what like programming is talking to people, you know, most of the time, and building a network of people. And so I think we need to, like, as a mentor to an apprentice, like, I need to help my apprentice understand this and help them understand what makes me successful in my work with our clients, for example.
So you brought up one thing, and I'm curious to get Lennox's perspective on this, which is being reliable for each other. I know has been probably the single greatest challenge to our apprenticeship platform at Frontside, where we've brought apprentices on. And the criticism that we had about our apprenticeship program is if I had 24/7 access to the mentorship that I needed, this process could have been done in 3 to 4 months. And instead, it's going to take 7 or 8 months. So it takes literally twice as long if they have to fight and scrap for every minute of mentorship that they get. And I'm wondering, Lennox, if you've experienced something like that and how you've addressed it, if so.
Maybe the thing with me is I really wanted to be part of, you know, of this apprenticeship program. So I had to work really, really hard to make this work. But it's given that for me, this apprenticeship program has been 100% remote. You know, there's no one standing over my shoulder or someone chasing me, asking me what I've done or, you know, whatever. So I had to discipline myself so that if I get tasks that I should do them on time. Even if, you know, Taras is not available, is not there to, is not chasing after me when I've done that. And the other thing is I wasn't good at communicating early on. You know, I would shy away from telling him when things were too complicated for me. I would try to solve everything on my own until I discovered that some things you just can't learn on your own. You have to ask for help. So since then, things have been a bit better.
That sounds like something almost universal to me. Every time we've attempted apprenticeship of any kind, maybe it's because we tend to select for people, but people that we come into contact that say, hey, I'd like to do apprenticeship tend to be people that are kind of self-starters, but they always tend to try to solve everything on their own. And it becomes this coaching exercise of having to have that person communicate back to you. Is there a sort of a platform for that? Or is that just a style that you've developed where you're willing to reach out more frequently? Or do you have check-in points or something like that during the apprenticeship that are like standard?
I mean, I think we don't have anything specific. You know, something that I use on projects is like if you're actively working on something, like if you're working on a project and you have that deliverable, like half an hour is how much time you get to play around with it and then let me know. But the emphasis is on the person building the responsibility, like taking responsibility of the deliverable and knowing what's necessary for them to be able to move forward. So like I'm seeing that now from Lennox, you know, where, which I didn't see before in the beginning, but I see it now where, you know, now if he's stuck, he's willing to say like, oh, okay, I don't know what's going on here. Like this doesn't make sense to me. You know, and I think that's a really important, like, I'm not sure exactly how to cultivate that, but for whatever reason, it's worked with Lennox, but I think it has to be, we need to help people learn that, that they have to take responsibility for their work.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems to be that process of learning to own their own thing, learning to kind of develop their own path. Again, that's one of those things that winds up being a better apprenticeship pattern for the person and also is a thing that lends itself to making this thing scalable where more people, you can benefit more people and have them help themselves and each other rather than having to be the nexus point for all questions and all accountability systems and everything. So it seems to be working really well for you. I have one more question that I want to ask from both Taras and Lennox. What you would say to people who are intimidated about taking on a role in mentorship? Knowing that, hey, that actually does sound hard or taking on a role and trying to cultivate and participate in apprenticeship, like what you would recommend to that person that is interested in it, but maybe intimidated by it. And then Lennox, the same question for you, but from the position of somebody that's trying to break in and kind of scared and nervous that it seems difficult or scary or opaque. So can we start with you, Taras? What would you say to somebody that is like, hey, I'm, you know, this sounds fun and cool and everything, but it sounds too hard
to be a mentor or to have an apprentice
to take on the idea or participate in apprenticeship in some way? Is there some way that you know that people could get involved that would not necessarily be super intimidating?
I guess I'm curious what the person's intention is, right? Because if you want to help people, that's the emphasis, then you have to, things are uncomfortable, especially good things that a lot of times they're uncomfortable until you get really good at them. If you're feeling comfortable, chances are you're not growing right now. And so for a lot of people to have, they're very good technically, helping others understand these things is the next step for them to evolve in their personal growth. So I think it's a really, if they really want to get better, having an apprentice is a very confronting and a very challenging thing, but it really creates real opportunities to see that you're actually getting better and you're improving as a person and as a technical leader.
And then as far as if they said, I don't see the opportunity for myself, my guess is there are people everywhere that could use help. Do you have any suggestions on where they could find people to help, ways that they can get involved? Do you have a place where, you know, are you looking for additional people to jump in and get involved on the mentorship side, or suggestions for ways that people might get involved?
I would love to help people who want to build like apprenticeship systems in their companies. I would love to help those people if they're able to do that. Otherwise, I think that creating more systems in the Ember community around apprenticeship, I think would be really helpful, like making it more systematic. Because right now it's something that I do, but I'd love for it to be something that the Ember community does. And then because from that, if we engage in that conversation, then we can create spaces where it will be easy for people to do these kind of things and find apprentices and find mentors. So yeah, I'd love for this to be an Ember community thing.
Well, it seems like this would be as good a place to start as any. So here we are. Maybe after this call, we'll figure something out and put something together and tell people to look for that. If they want to participate in mentorship and they consider themselves Ember or Ember adjacent, I'd like to see something in the next little while that lets people participate in a more systematic fashion. So that sounds like an opportunity for sure. And if there are people that want to participate in that, it sounds like you're Ember Sherpa, you're the person to reach out to. And then Linux, for your sake, for people that are kind of want to break into technology, are really intimidated by it, obviously you're in a remote part of the world and your access has been somewhat limited. You've had to even fight for internet access in your life as well, which is a foreign concept to a lot of people. So what would you tell to those people that are intimidated by doing this, scared that they're going to waste somebody's time, scared that they'll fail at it?
I think if someone really, really wants to learn, they should find a mentor or go through an apprenticeship, because that's learning from someone who's experienced, someone who has your best interest at heart, someone who's willing to put in the effort to teach you stuff. You can't be that. If you find that someone who's willing to do that, then put in the effort and go through the program. Because usually an apprenticeship is tailored to, you know, for the specific individual, the apprentice. Where else will you get that?
And there's not a ton of access to that in the world. So it sounds like that's a big problem that's worthy of fixing in the tech industry. So having y'all on to come here and talk about it, lend some expertise to it and start putting some ideas and process and pushing that conversation forward, it matters a lot, certainly to me personally, but also to, you know, what the point of what we're trying to do at the front side. If people want to get in touch with you all, how would they do that, Taras? How people get in touch with you?
I'm Ember Sherpa on Twitter, and Taras at embersherpa.com via email. So I always do try my best to talk to people as much as possible and be available to people as much as possible. So if anybody reaches out to me, I'd love to talk to them. So
yeah, you've definitely been accessible to us, which is why we're talking today. And I really appreciate that. I mean, you've been genuinely super helpful. We haven't really gotten into it in this podcast, but we've worked with you quite a bit and are working to improve our apprenticeship program with your help. And I can't tell you how much we appreciate it. And then for you, Linux, how do people get in touch with you?
I am at Zinyando on Twitter and Linux at embershepa.com.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you both very much. This was super enlightening. I feel like it's frustrating because I feel like we just barely scratched the surface. But I feel like there's some work that we need to go do to put together some process around this. Maybe there's some blog posts or some further discussion around this to put this together. And I would love to talk with you all again when we have something cool to share with people. But what you're doing already is so awesome. I'd like for more people to know about it, because I literally have never seen it done as successfully, as consistently as I've seen the Ember Sherpa apprenticeship setup work. So thanks very much for both of y'all for putting that into the community and for sharing with us.
It means so much to hear you, Brendan, say this, because I respect both of you very much. I think you guys have a really great reputation in our community, and it means the world to me to hear you guys say that. Thank you so much for having us here.